Welcome in. Doug Gottlieb here, and you are listening to All Ball, All Basketball, All the Time. Thanks so much for downloading, subscribing, rating, and being part of All Ball Nation. Got a great guest for you, Tim Miles, who's the former head coach of Nebraska, before that Colorado State, before that North Dakota State. We'll go through kind of some of his coaching history, some interesting thoughts. He's a very funny, loquacious guy who you'll see on Fox TV calling college basketball games this year. Just called his first game, Xavier's first win against, was it Jacksonville? Yeah. Anyway, Tim Miles will be my guest in moments here on the All Ball podcast. Let me give you a couple of takes college, give you a couple takes pro, and then we'll get to Tim Miles. First with college, the Champions Classic. It was, in fact, a classic. It's what teams, even though they've allowed teams to play more basketball before their first game, the idea of playing an ACC game or of playing this type of challenge matchup in November 5th, like, that's what you get when it's too early, right? It's like when you ever gotten cookie dough. Who doesn't like? Does anyone in the world not like cookie dough? But you get cookie dough, no matter how good they look, if they're not done, like, you can cook it a little too much. I actually don't mind burnt cookies. Part of it was my mom burned cookies when I was a kid, so I just got used to it. But you dip it in milk and it still tastes good. Undercooked, it just doesn't work. That's what those teams were. That's why we had such a litany of turnovers. So you do have to take it with a grain of salt, not just the results, but also the play. But there are some takeaways from it. Let me get to Duke, Kansas, Michigan State, and Kentucky. Let's start with Kansas. You're going to look at the stats. You're going to say Ochai Agbaji played well. He was not very good in the second half. And several turnovers. He had five turnovers and a couple bad decisions in transition. Some missed shots around the basket. Remember, this is a kid who was going to redshirt last year, played this year. And I feel like Isaiah Moss maybe won't take some of his minutes, but he'll take some of them. Not having Moss didn't allow them to go small last night. And I think, you know, Sylvia D'Souza looked like a guy who hadn't played in a year. I do think that by the end of the year, De Silva will be playing some of those minutes that McCormick played. My concern for Kansas is, do they have the shooting? Right? That's the big question. Because with Dotson and with Marcus Garrett, you know, you have two really talented guards who can put the ball on the deck and get to the basket. Dotson is not a great shooter, nor is he going to be a great shooter this year. Agbaji can make shots. He made two threes last night, but they need more shooting, especially with Isabuke being so limited offensively, can't even pass out of the double team. But they're really long. They're pretty big inside. They'll develop. Probably Jalen Wilson, he'll get more minutes, you would think, as the season goes on. He's only a freshman. It's very early in his freshman year. But this just was a game of a team that had shooting against a team that did not. And Duke didn't even really make shots until, you know, Cassius Stanley made a three and got two dunks. I mean, that personal 8-0 run was really what brought the game back to the Duke Blue Devils. But Duke does have, you know, with Jack White and Alex O'Connell. O'Connell didn't shoot the ball well. You know, Trey Jones, Goldwire, Cassius Stanley, and of course, you know, Michael Hurd, who had three threes. They just have more shooting. And the basic math of it is three versus two. It also, like, Kansas is, unless they can play small, and I know they've played big for a good portion of his time, but playing big has its limitations, especially when you play against the way teams are playing now, which is four out or even five out, right? That's ultimately what doomed them against Villanova in the Final Four going back a couple years ago, is they couldn't hide their big guy. So I like Kansas. I think number three is based upon the fact that they return so much talent and that Bill always finds a way to figure it out. But this doesn't appear, this is not a team that has Dotson plays in the NBA, but he's not an NBA player yet. And I think their lack of shooting is the thing that gives me the most pause in thinking they'll get back to winning another Big 12 title. All right, let's get to the Dukies. So look, this Duke team, obviously they want to kind of build around Hurt and Vernon Carey. Carey's very, very left-handed. He's turning over his right shoulder. He's going to his left, and there's nothing you can do about it. But he obviously, I mean, for a kid his age to have that body, pretty impressive. They don't have a Zion this year. And I think Hurt's good. I mean, obviously he can stretch out, can shoot the basketball. He got a little Joey Beard to him. And when I say Joey Beard, people are like, well, he was a bust at, he was a good player at, it's more style of playing. White kid who can face up, got some bunnies, can dunk on you, can also shoot the basketball. I don't know, and I'd have to watch more. Like, I know he's 11 on people's draft board, but, like, you have to be so good to be a 6'10", face-up shooting four and make it in the NBA, right? Because you're not a five, you're not guard, so that means you're 1 through 4, you're switching onto ball screens. Did that look like a dude, his kid is switching onto ball screens? Like, now, obviously, Zach Collins, before he hurt his shoulder, there's a guy who could be, and this kid's a better shooter at this point than Zach Collins. You got to be really, really good. I don't think he's bad. I think he's good. I'm in terms of as a pro prospect, I have to see some more. But I like this team. I don't love Trey Jones as a finisher. He obviously made the big pull-up jump shot, which bounced to went in. Cassius Stanley showed some signs. Remember, Cassius is 20 years old, so he's inexperienced, but he's not young. He's a good player. You know, he's a catch-and-shoot guy, or he can go all the way to the basket. There's not a ton of in-between, but stuck his nose in there, got a big drive late in the game when they needed a bucket, hit that big three, got the big dunks. Like, I think it's a really good basketball team. Do I think they're great? No. No, they don't have RJ Barrett, and they don't have Zion Williamson. Are they good? Yeah. Yeah, they're a good team. They're a good team. And that may, you know, obviously the Zion injury derailed them last year, but that may get them a ton of wins. I don't think they're a dominant team. It's early, but they have some age, and they have good players, and they have some depth too, like bringing Jack White and O'Connell and Goldwire off the bench. Like, these are good players that have played some high-level basketball. And I think they will wear down a lot of the other teams that don't have that sort of depth, but they will not overwhelm you. So you got a good point guard who needs to finish better. You have good young talent. It's going to get better. You have good depth. That's a good top 10 basketball team. Am I willing to say they're the best team in the country right now? No. No. Michigan State. So, look, my issue with Michigan State, going back to even the start of the year and the assumption that they would be awesome, is basically this. Last year, outside of Cash and Winston, who scared you, right? Like, they found a way to get enough stops. They found a way to make enough plays. But it wasn't like they were dominating teams. They just are really well coached, played really good defense, and then end of shot clock, Cassius Winston would just make a play and break your back. And then, you know, I thought Tillman became a really good basketball player, but, like, again, look statistically at what they had last year and what's gone this year. Nick Ward's gone, and I know he was a shell of himself late. Matt McQuaid's gone. Kenny Goins is gone. Like, they lost a lot from last season. And I don't know if Aaron Henry is there just yet. So the idea that they're the number one team because they have a preseason player of the year and because of how far they went last season. Again, they have one shot creator on the team. They don't really have a guy they can throw it into. And they don't have Matt McQuaid stretching the floor the way he did last season. That's 2 threes a game. And if you don't have Langford, and you don't have McCoy, and you don't have Ward, and you don't have Kenny Goins, like, those are other guys stepping into roles that they are clearly not ready for. Let's get into Kentucky, shall we? I thought Kentucky played exceptionally hard on defense. I thought it wasn't just how hard they played that, you know, when Michigan State runs some of their actions and spreads you out, and you have to switch and talk, and for a team with a substantial amount of youth. And I do think we're going to sit here and go, like, look at how young they are. And the great thing about these teams, all four of those teams that played last night, is there are some returners that, or, you know, you add Nate Sestina, you have Ashton Hagans and Emmanuel Quickley, you know, two sophomores. You have Nick Richards. Like, these are all guys that have played a good amount of college basketball. And E.J. Montgomery. Really, you had one freshman in a Tyrese Maxey, the kid from Texas, who kind of took over the game offensively. But it was their connectivity defensively, which was really, really impressive. Shouldn't be surprising considering how good a defender Ashton Hagans is. Now, would I be concerned about their shooting? Maybe. Yeah. I mean, do I think Tyrese Maxey is going to shoot mid-40s from three? I don't. I wonder who they can develop as a scorer because Hagans is not really a scorer, like a shooter scorer, and people adjust to that. But I like this team, and I do think that their overall length, athleticism, style of play, and I think that, you know, Sestina, as a transfer to a place like Kentucky, you know, his role will be different than it was at Bucknell, and he'll have to be even more blue-collar than he was at Bucknell. I think he fits that. I think he's a good fit for what they want to do, especially being able to stretch the floor and hit some jump shots. I wonder if Johnny Juzang is going to be able to work his way into the rotation, only played 2 minutes. But they're going to need one or two more of those freshmen to show the ability to score, because scoring, I do think, at some point, will be called upon. But this team is not the national championship team defensively that fed everything to Anthony Davis. But they're really long. They're really athletic. They do have some older pieces. And I'm okay calling them the best team in the country right now. Doesn't mean that they can't or won't be beaten. And that's a reasonable thing. Like, they could be beaten because there's going to be droughts. And if you can handle their pressure, you can make them play catch up. I'm not sure how well they score the basketball. But I also think that they're going to make a lot of teams look really, really bad. And we won't see... we won't see that possibly until maybe the Louisville game, which is not until the end of December, right? They got Utah on the road. They got Ohio State, but that December game against Louisville feels to me like we'll find out if they have enough offense, and it gives Cal enough time to figure out who outside of Tyrese Maxey do I want shooting the basketball. But Maxey appears he's okay being an alpha. And with all of those other veteran pieces, I just don't know if there's enough shooting at the other guard spots. But man, they can defend. Boy, they're really connected. They really, really played hard. And it's a little bit of he does get his teams to play hard, even the NIT team. But I feel like this team has a special kind of wiring of toughness that some of the other more glamorous John Calipari teams maybe didn't have.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's welcome him in. He's Fox College Basketball's newest analyst. Of course, longtime head coach, most recently at Nebraska. He's Tim Miles. He joins us here on All Ball. What is it like to now be an analyst and watch a school that you just coached, 19 wins last year, lose last night at home to UC Riverside? Your honest reaction when you see that score?
Well, first of all, what's it like to be an analyst? It's exciting. I thought Xavier was a very good basketball team. It was a great environment, different way to take in a game that I haven't got to do in 25 years probably, you know, outside of a Final Four or an NCAA regional here or there. So that was fun and exciting. I miss coaching. I want to coach. But, you know, I honestly, with the game, anything could happen the first year. I was surprised about Nebraska, but David Patrick can get players now.
I want to get into all the other stuff and what it was like to call a game, your thoughts on Xavier, but I'm just like, what the emotions that go through, like, do you want them to win? Do you want them to lose? What's the honest? Because you're seeing that the perception of you, Tim, is, oh, he's one of the world's greatest guys, and you are, right? No, you know what? Nobody says like Tim Miles is a bad dude. No one. Okay. But even the best people have honest emotions, and you know, like, yeah, you know, I'm you'll get another job, but you wanted to see the Nebraska thing through, I'm sure. So when you look down, and I'm sure people are texting you during the game, like, are you seeing this going on? What's that feel like?
Yeah, I got very little text, by the way. But at the same time, you know, you don't jump for joy. You don't wish ill on anybody. Sure. I still have some guys there that I recruited. And when you looked at, you know, that, I felt bad for them. I felt bad for Fred because, you know, you don't want to come out your opener and lose, right? I mean, you want to do your best and put your best foot forward. But, you know, they reset things. They moved some guys on after the season. And so they brought in some guys. They're still waiting on a Stevenson kid to get eligible if he gets his waiver appeared that will help them some on the rebounding end. But, no, you don't, like, I'm more neutral to it than you'd probably expect. I'm not
– sure.
There's no joy in it for me. And, you know, I just kind of feel bad for them. I'm not – but, at the same time, when you look at things, you know, I don't mean to sound selfish, but I just have to worry, stay and focus on what I'm doing and trying to be the best me so I can be a great Fox broadcaster like you.
Okay, so you're calling a game. What is that experience like of preparing, of meeting with coaches, you know, of sitting with Travis Steele before the game? Like, being on the other side of the table is a new experience. Take me through what, you know, last couple of days have been like.
Yeah, you know, I've spent some other time, quote-unquote, consulting with some programs, so I've got to see some guys' behind-the-scenes stuff, which has been great. I think that's been helpful for me. A couple of Power Five schools. Second of all, sitting with Travis, watching them practice was fun. Just seeing some of the different things they do, I thought was impressive. I thought that he and his staff did a good job. Tony Jasek and Dan Beret, I've known for a long time at Jacksonville. And so watching them in their shoot around and their organization and what they were doing was fun. It's a little surreal. You know, I got there and, you know, I have this idea what it's going to take. I talked to some guys like Robbie Hummel, a great deal, Sean Morris. And, okay, what do I need? You know, how do Nick Baugh, okay, how do I do this? And so I kind of
never
call.
You never call me, by the way. Yeah, you never call. Never send a text like, hey, dude, can I, you know, you've been doing this 17 years. Huh?
You're just so big time, you know, but
oh,
I do.
That's what it is. That's what it is. You know, got to play golf. I got to do this. Huh?
Yeah, I don't want you to, you know, a menial task like trying to get me organized. But let me tell you this. I'm 10 minutes into the game, and the stuff I have in front of me is no help. Like,
correct.
Whatever plan
correct.
I had going in was out the door. So then I flip open a roster and a media guide quick and kind of had some notes written down on something else and then just went with it that way. But so now this morning I flew back from Cincinnati, and I got back to Lincoln here this morning about an hour ago. And I was working on the plane the whole time on a new sheet, a one sheet instead of two, and seeing if I can't get that organized. And my Excel, my ability to work on the Excel file or a Word document has diminished over the years as I've taken other jobs. When I was an NEI guy, I could do a lot of cool stuff, you know, on a computer. And I'm not quite there anymore, Doug.
Okay. So look, you and I can talk off air about it if you want, but I would just like, I think that a lot of, and I don't know what other people have told you, my working plan is like, and it's hard now this time of the year to watch, you know, the previous five games, obviously that's the fun part to watching the games and being able to break down tape. But what you got to do is get a coach or an assistant to give you a story on each kid,
Yeah,
and
I
don't actually. This is I don't know how well kept a secret it is. Seth Davis thinks I'm nuts. I no longer do a board. I don't believe in it. If I don't know it, then what the hell's what's the purpose of having it written down?
Well, if you've seen them five times, you know the problem was. Everybody had the like six newcomers each.
Yeah, so no, that's the crazy thing about the sport. Yeah, and I've been really fortunate in my mercurial path here in that working, you know, like the kid from Bucknell who's at Kentucky. Like I happened to do Bucknell's semifinals and championship game like th- 3 years ago, whatever. So I actually saw him play a couple times at Bucknell. See, and I've become a fan of the program. And so when that takes place, like, so a lot of the, when you get to cover these smaller conferences, guys that transfer up, you know their stories a little bit. But it's really, the sport is really hard now for fans because you're like, wait, he's where and he's here and the freshmen are here and then gone? Like, I don't know. It's hard. Like I've done, like you said, you've done this your entire professional life, been a coach. I've done this basically outside of 3 years of playing ball professionally. And it's gotten progressively harder for me to prep for a season. I can't imagine what it's like for a fan to prep. How challenging does it, did it make it for you as a coach with all of the turnover, with the, you know, with the transfer stuff that takes place?
Well, first of all, the way it, you know, impacts your program, I've been on the receiving end and the giving end. And, you know, we had one guy that left at the end of June that really hurt us. I mean, we went from at least an NIT team to a team that, you know, won 14 games or whatever it was. And at a high major level, it's not that hard to flip that script and win 18 or 19. And if you're 18 and 13 or whatever it is, you're in the NIT and you're probably hosting a game. On the contrary, if you go 13 and 18, everybody wants your head. And so it's been difficult. You know, it's obviously getting easier and easier. My philosophy was if you wind down the transfer portal, don't dip your toe in the pool. Yeah. You make a commitment. You're either with us or against us. And so don't expect your scholarship to be available. You know, and I think that when you look at those things and you decide how you want to run your program, buy-in and loyalty are due. You know, they're due for a program. And the coach owes the player, and the player owes the program and his teammates. And, you know, there's such passivity toward, you know, I can remember when, you know, I was in college and I didn't even play, but I can remember a kid kind of squawking about transferring, and one of the upperclassmen just put him up against the locker and said, "You're not transferring. We need you." You know, like threatened him. But there was that kind of commitment, and that's not there. It's so much more of a fluid society because of a variety of reasons. There's a thousand. It's not just AAU basketball or not just, you know, less nuclear families or whatever. There's a plethora of reasons, and that's the way, you know, our whole society is. And so it's harder, it's different, but, you know, the more you can stress it, the more you can keep it together and keep that continuity, obviously the more successful. The guys that can do that, you know, I've seen coaches go on spring break, Doug, and do home visits for their returners on spring break, so re-recruit their team during spring break.
Genius idea.
Amazing.
You grew up in Dolan, South Dakota. Did you grow up there or were you just born there?
No, I was born. Yeah, we didn't have a hospital, Doug. Now, when you come in from the west on Dolan, it says population 306. And when you come in from the east, it says population 297. So there's 9 missing people. You know, just a little town. Grew up there, lived in the same house for 18 years, youngest of 5. Just always loved watching, you know, playing basketball, playing all sports, but just fell in love with Al McGuire, Dick Enberg, even Billy Packer. All those guys were just, that, you know, you felt like Al McGuire was always teaching you something when you were listening to him. And I'm 53 years old, and so we didn't have that many college games. It wasn't until I was a sophomore in high school that we got 13 channels of cable, which included ESPN and then WGN, so we could catch some games there, and TBS, WTBS, actually, so we could see some, you know, pro games of Atlanta, you know, some Bulls games here and there, and then, you know, ESPN wasn't showing games every night, so you don't have the consumption that you had at one time. And what I look for is just, you know, when you grow up in a small town, what's great is your mom would kiss you on the cheek in the morning. It'd be 8 o'clock. She goes, "You know, you got ball practice at 9. I'll see you home for dinner at 6. And you could go to an account we owned a weekly newspaper. So you go to a little account, you go to the cafe, order a side of French fries for lunch, which was a one I liked, and then just charge it. Just charge it. You go to the grocery store and get some lunch and meat and have a sandwich and just charge it because, you know, there's all the payment in kind, advertising for credit. So, you know, I was so independent at such a young age, being the youngest, being in a small town, and that you just, you know, you figure you knew when you got in trouble, and you got in trouble real good. You know how to stay out of trouble. You know how to navigate your way around certain issues and situations, but it's just sad anymore that young kids don't get to grow up with that kind of freedom. It's a different society, and it felt a lot safer back in the, you know, early 70s, mid-70s than it does now, and I know there's bad things going on then, but now we won't let our kid cross the street without, you know, ushering them through there.
What was Mayville State like?
Yeah, Mayville was such a great place. They were 2-22 and 2-22 the year before I got there. And so coming in and, you know, we did what Fred Hoiberg just did, brought in a whole bunch of transfers, Division II transfers, JUCO transfers, all the likes like that. And we had less than three scholarships, and we had an old gym that once we painted the gym and added new lights, we got 100% more lighting, so twice as bright. The gym was twice as bright, you know, that same year. And it just... the way you watch practice, and then after you painted it and put the new lights in at Christmas and you watch practice, it was just a whole new environment. So it's just, I mean, when you're grateful for paint job and the lights, you know, I think you're taught a different way. My second year, I was able to hire Craig Smith as an assistant coach for $1,000 and brought Craig into the game, the head coach at Utah State now. And yep. He and I hit it off well. We were together 11 years. He was my assistant at four different jobs. And,
how did you meet him? Like, remember, take me back to how you actually met. Cause I got Craig next week.
I couldn't get rid of him.
No, but how did you meet him? I know you got, how did you actually meet him? What was your first meeting?
Yeah, he was a student at North Dakota. And I was at Mayville about 35 miles south. And he had approached the University of North Dakota staff about being a graduate assistant. Because he wanted to coach. And he, you know, was just a high school player, didn't play college basketball, but wanted to coach. And they didn't have anything for me, so they called me. One of the assistants called me and said, hey, Todd Coring was a graduate assistant who I eventually hired at my next job. And he said, hey, this young guy is good. I think he's high energy. I think you guys have hit it off really well. Take a look. And then Craig, in the meantime, we met. We had lunch together. And then I just didn't think I could pull it off, so I was calling him to tell him I had no job for him. And he goes, Coach, we're neighbors. I already moved down here. My wife's got a job. And so he just, like, forced himself. It was like, you know, he forced himself on me. It was awesome. And we got along great and had a chance to work together then at Nebraska, Colorado State, and, of course, North Dakota State way before all that.
What about Southwest Minnesota State? Because you left Mayville for Southwest Minnesota State. So what did your salary go from at Mayville to Southwest Minnesota State?
I made $27,000 at Mayville, plus a little bit for camps. And then I made, I think, 42. I think I was a Division I coach for my third year at North Dakota State. I think I made over $100,000, like $105,000, $110,000, maybe. So that would have been 2007.
In 2001, you took Southwest Minnesota State, because this was kind of your pattern, right? Like, usually year four, year five, that's when you would, yep. I mean, that's what you did at Colorado State, North Dakota State, year two was good, and year, I think, five or six was outstanding before you left. You know, Nebraska, obviously, you got the tournament your second year, but it was like year five or six that you should have gotten in the tournament. Your 2001 Southwest Minnesota State team dominated your league. You got all the way to the Elite Eight. If you were to describe that, huh? You lost to Bakersfield or
in
Bakersfield?
Bakersfield. Yep. It was
all
in
the
Bakersfield.
Garden spots. What was that team like?
Beautiful. That team was phenomenal. I had three kids that could play Division I basketball at various levels. And we had Chad Kuhn, 6'10", 245. His brother Scott was a Division II All-American at 6'8", probably 215. Jacob Ball was a guard that was terrific. He was the all-time leading scorer And at that time, I had four straight jobs where we coached and recruited the all-time leading scorer each job. And if I, you know, and that was pretty not easily done, and that was pretty fun to you know coach guys like that too. But that team was really physical, and it was a tough team, and we ran into a buzzsaw in Kentucky Wesleyan. Of course, they vacated that national championship 2 years later because they had three ineligible guys on the team. But they didn't vacate the loss, Doug. So I still remember it pretty good.
Okay, so all of a sudden North Dakota State comes calling, right? But they were, what, D2 going to be D1? What was the pitch
D2
on North Dakota
State? It was
just
a very good D2 job. Very good D2 job, and I was excited to have it. I was looking forward to it, and we get there, and during the interview, the president says, you know, we may go Division I. And, you know, we had just come off taking Southwest State, who had one winning season in 10 before we got there, and we built it up, you know, and like you say, year four, we slug it out of the park. So, you know, I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof. I can do anything, you know. Come on, man. And so they hired a new athletic director. I was hired by an interim athletic director. And the new athletic director was Gene Taylor, who's now the athletic director at we all know where he's at. He's at Kansas State. Chris Kleeman just pulled off the big upset. And Gene came in. He says, we're going to do it. We're going to strategically plan it. We're going to announce it. Be ready. And we didn't have a league. We didn't have anything. And so I remember just, it was so, you know, we were 3 years Division I independent. And that was just, oh, that was tough. But
what was the hardest scheduling you can remember? Like, we went from here to here to here to play a game. What was the, give me the craziest scheduling thing as an independent?
Yeah, well, it was actually, we had a 4-game run that we agreed to play the other independent teams. And so we went Utah Valley and we lost on a Thursday night. And then we went to Wisconsin and played an 11 a.m. game on Saturday. So we lose on a last-second tip-in, and then we beat Wisconsin when they were 13 in the country. And so that was just because we had a 30-minute practice. And my scouting folder was practically empty on Wisconsin. It was, we're going to play them this way, we're going to play our brand of basketball, and we're going to play a heck of a lot better than we did against Utah Valley. Dick Hunsaker was the coach there. And he was a tough-minded guy. I liked Dick a lot. He knew what he was doing. And so, you know, when you looked at this, it was one of those things that next year was even more interesting, I thought, because what we did was we played the four independents. So how about this? So Thursday, Saturday, we go Utah Valley, Texas Pan-American. All right? So that's a little bit of travel. In the day in between games.
I don't even know how you get to Texas Pan American. You go to nowhere and you take a right. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Albuquerque. You should have taken a left. And so as we went, you know, we got back home and it was literally, you know, I was like a diamond plus on Delta because of the, you know, it was so nuts. And then the next day or the next week on Wednesday, we went to Fort Wayne, and then we ended up in the New Jersey Institute of Tech. Nice. And so we went from, Newark, Brownsville, to Orem, Utah, kind of that dot within 7 days.
Okay, so then Colorado State. You took – people remember what you left, right? Pierce Young and those guys.
Yep.
But I don't think people remember what you took over. I think your first year you didn't win a game in league, and the league was really, really good. When you walked into Colorado State, take me through the job, what you thought of it. Obviously, it's a great college town, but it is different from you'd been Minnesota and Dakotas and kind of that area of the country. It's relatively similar, but not really. What was it like when you took over Colorado State?
Yeah, Northern Colorado is a lot of transplants. You know, it's a lot of people from Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas that have moved over, and certainly Front Range people too. But it's a great community. But when we took over, there was 13 scholarships accounted for, and by the time we got to the season, 10 of those guys were gone. They'd either quit, been relieved of their duties by me, usually because of a some issue with the law. And Jason Smith went 17th in the NBA draft, which he should have. He might have went 19th, but Jason went to the NBA, just retired, I think, from the NBA a year ago or so. So we had to start over. We go 0-16 in the league, and Steve Fisher calls me at the end of the year. Now, if folks remember, it was, here's the league. You go right up the Front Range. You got TCU was in the league, Air Force, Colorado State, Wyoming. Then you get in the mountain regions, and you got BYU, Utah, right? And then you go over, you got San Diego State, UNLV. And then when TCU left and BYU left, we got Boise. And so, I mean, it was a ridiculous league for, you know, I was there 5 years. And I think we put more teams. I think we tripled the amount of teams we put in the NCAA than the Pac-12 had.
So here's what people want to know. What you mentioned all the success you had at Mayville, at Southwest Minnesota State, and obviously Colorado State in building something that hadn't previously had success. So if somebody's, hey, I want to replicate what Tim does and how he's done it, like what are the four or five things that you've done that's allowed you to be that guy who builds a winner from a place that doesn't really win?
Well, I think that we're, you know, the recipe is the same. Craig Smith will tell you that too. The recipe is the same. The recipe is we're going to play good fundamental basketball. We're going to give ourselves a chance to win every night, you know, and we're going to surround ourselves with winners too. And as you look at things, I think it's important that, you know, you recruit the right kind of guys that fit you and your style. I think we do a good job of rooting guys out in the recruiting process that, quite frankly, probably can't play for me. You know, I mean, if I'm fighting too hard or requiring too much, you know, it's just tough. It's tough on those guys. And so at the end of the day, when you look at them, you have to be able to know who to recruit and then coach them the right way. And the way we recruit them is we're honest from the get-go. And we don't pressure a commitment. We don't we don't twist the guy's arm to a point where we try and get him to rush into a commitment or anything like that. We want to make sure, you know, like I say, commit when you're committed, you know, and when you can defend us, you know, and you know that you can, that nobody can talk you out of this commitment is when I want you to come. I was never a high pressure guy like, hey, you gotta do this. Come on. We gotta have you. You're not leaving campus without, I was never like that. And it drove my assistants crazy. Maybe I'd still be employed if I was like that. But at the same time, I think that just that buy-in on the front end can help you. And if the guys know what they're going to get, they'll play hard for you. And, you know, you play hard, you play smart, you win basketball games.
If you could do one thing differently in Nebraska, what would it be?
More shooting. More three-point shooting. Yeah. Just more three-point shooting. You know, whenever we outshot our opponents, we had very, very, we had good years. And, but too often times, we just did not have enough shooting. We had length, athleticism. We could guard all right, but we just didn't have the outside shooting.
In recruiting that something, or was it, I mean, like, look, the facilities that you were, you walked into this incredible facilities, was it in practice you should have gotten more shots up, or is it simply recruiting?
No,
we should have recruited more shooting, valued shooting more.
I think guys that can shoot, I think that you can change their shot a little, you can improve it a little, but at the same time, you can have all the facilities you want. You can have, we had NOAA, we have all the bells and whistles of shot tracker, and our kids work their tails off. I mean, our kids work so hard at shooting, it was ridiculous. But, I mean, it just, look at Kawhi Leonard. I mean, Kawhi had been working on his jumper every day at San Diego State and still wasn't making 17-footers. and he kept doing it more and more and more as a pro. And now he's less, you know, he's got less stuff going on from an aspect of you know, just class or any kind of distraction. And so as he's got all that, he knows that that he can you know, just concentrate on this one thing and he'll be all right. So I mean, I just think more natural shooters would have helped us.
How close were you to taking a job after you lost your job?
I wasn't, because I wanted my son. My son felt like he's a freshman in high school, and he felt like he was at home. You know what I mean? He felt like he was there. My daughter was in college. I had other opportunities years prior and didn't move on it. You know, I wanted to make it work at Nebraska. And so they hired a good man. Fred is an excellent coach, does a really good job, and I think he'll have a great success. Well, it took two of them to replace me. You know, Doc Sadler's there too. So I give him a hard time about that. But it's one of those things that, Doug, when you look at it, I think it's important that the coulda, woulda, shouldas drive you crazy. You know, I mean, we had a lot of things go on the last two or three years that, you know, that you just sit there and say, come on. I mean, any one of these things don't happen, we're probably fine. But that's the way life goes. It's a good life lesson. And when things are at their most difficult, you need to be at your best as a coach, as a dad, as a whoever. That's what we tried to do.
Okay, so let me, if you were to give me one sentence on, because you coached in an incredible coaching league, right? Like, the thing about the Big Ten is, like you have some really, really good basketball coaches. Okay, so just a sentence on what it's like to play against a Tom Izzo team.
They tilt the floor. They're always coming downhill at you. And that's in everything, okay. Rebounding, transition, everything. Like, they are on the attack. I mean, pretend that you're on the bottom end of a teeter-totter, and they got five guys running down at you. You know, that's what it feels like.
What was, and obviously he's in the pros, but what was it like to play against a John Beilein coach team?
Yeah, it was scary because he probably had the best individual offensive game plan time after time after time than anybody in the league. He would figure it out.
Okay. What about when you played against Bo Ryan early in your league run? It was Bo Ryan. What made Bo Ryan's team? Yeah. What was that like to play against?
I think this the discipline and the physicality of his teams.
Okay. What about what about Fran McCaffrey's teams?
System, shooting.
Ton of shooting. Yeah. Like, so if you guys could switch, if you could switch, that would be incredible, right? Like, we get some of your shooting and you get some of our length and athleticism, somehow trade some players.
I mean, we'd both be okay. Yeah. And he'd still go okay. Don't get me wrong.
What about Painter?
Yeah, Paint, phenomenal mind on offense. Just, I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in the United States. And I don't even think that's close. I think he is one of the top dudes out there.
How did they get that back together? Because if you remember, like, early when you got into the league, that thing was going, after Hummel left, those guys left.
Yeah.
You know, they were like below 500.
I think he counts some guys out of the program, got his kind of guys, tough dudes that can have skill and are going to play for Purdue.
That's a great point. It's a great point. Brad Underwood, obviously he's only been there for a couple years. What are his teams like to prepare for?
Pressure. Yep. Just whatever amount of pressure he can put on you, he's going to defensively.
Tom Crean.
Fast-paced offense.
Yeah, Yeah, they and he kind of changed it and opened it up even more there at the end before he lost his job, and that's kind of how he's playing now. Like really opened it up.
I tell you, he developed pros. I don't think Thomas Fries would be where he at if he didn't play at Indiana.
No, and Oladipo, like Oladipo's developed himself, but people forget like Oladipo wasn't some huge get when they got him, right? And the space OG in his Ananobi offense allowed Oladipo to be a star.
OG Ananobi was the same way. You know, he wasn't a top 50 kid or anything like that.
Yeah, just a phenomenal athlete. Richard Pitino.
Yeah, I like Richard a lot, and you know, he's got some of his dad's elements. Richard, I think those last 2 years, the physicality he had with Jordan Murphy, yep, and just that whole clan. Wow, they were like an old school Big Ten team.
Thad Matta.
Great defensively. Really hard to play against defensively.
And what about Chris Holtman?
Yeah, I mean, and Chris Holtman, rock solid defensively, really creative offensively. I really liked. He was another guy like Beilein that was crafty. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. No question about it. The place. Okay, so you have a son who's in high school, a daughter who's in college. We started by saying, hey, look, I'm a Fox college basketball analyst and I want to be a good one. But you also said, I'm a coach and I want to coach. The next place you coach is going to, doesn't have to be a school, but it's what is the style of university that fits you?
I feel like I can be a fit at because I've been mid-major, high major, Division I independent. Feel like I could, you know, be a part of just about anything that way, but it's going to be a school that wants me. I don't want to feel like the stray cat.
The best part about losing your job is what?
Oh, no alarm, no blood pressure problems. Like it's like, is this how people live? It's just like, I don't have to do anything. You know, I just have to. You know, it's just ridiculous. It's been eye-opening for me. I had 24 straight years as a head coach. Never since I was in high school did I not have a team, so to speak.
Yep.
And so it's been so different, but it's just, you know, relaxing. I'm glad to be working with Fox. And I told him I'm going to do as well as I can. Like, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. And, if something pops up this year or next year or whatever, I coach again and it's a good fit, we're going to do it. If not, we're not going to do it. We're going to keep looking and see, make sure it's right.
You're going to have your own podcast on The Athletic, right? Now, is it going to be like you and Craig Smith just talking ball and telling old stories? Are you going to be analyzing stuff? What's your style going to be?
I'm looking forward to CJ Moore and I working together. We're just still waiting for the final, everybody to go through and Apple and Spotify and everybody to say, okay, yep, we'll have you on, you know, and all that fun stuff. So it's just a matter of getting through all that. But CJ Moore and I are going to be together on that. And we're going to do a variety of things. Just like I might interview some coaches again, like you and I have talked about earlier. How'd you get, like, so I had an idea, like, okay, what's the story behind this guy? So, like, some player that they probably shouldn't have got, they recruited him. And it's not condescending or, you know, like, how'd you get
I got it. They're super interesting. I mean, yeah. Like, look, every, yeah, all these, okay. Okay, so let me use that. Your signature player at Colorado State was probably Pierce, right?
Yeah. I mean, just first time I ever went, saw him play, he didn't score.
Where was it? He's from Arvada, Colorado. Where did you go see him play?
Yeah, he was at Ralston High School, and they played Boulder High, who was no juggernaut. And, he didn't score, you know? And I'm like, Nico Medved, who's now the head coach, I'm like, what are you doing? What are we doing here, man? And then we brought him into elite camp, and we had all of our wings. That was back when you could get kids to campus a little easier. And so he came to camp and just kicked everybody's butt. And he was the guy that taught me, like, recruit guys that come up with the ball. Recruit guys that come up with the ball. And Pierce can come up with the ball. Dorian Green, nobody recruited Dorian Green, and he started every game he ever played.
Yeah, and I mean, he's from Lawrence, Kansas. Not that Kansas would recruit him, but you'd think the Big 12 schools would recruit him. Obviously, you got Colton Iverson
out there.
You know. Okay, you're...
Colton Iverson.
Go on.
Colton Iverson was a great get. Yankton, South Dakota get. His dad interviewed me for the... He was the AD at Mount Marty and the women's coach. Didn't hire me. So I kept telling him, you owe me one. Chalky, you owe me one. You know? And, I mean, just little things like that. Like, how would you know that you're going to interview in 1994, 95... And then this little kid that's running around is going to end up being this, you know, NBA draft pick eventually.
He was not a little. He could not have ever been a little kid. Colton Iverson could not have ever been a little child.
You're right. He was not.
Okay, the craziest snowstorm or weather pattern you've ever driven through.
I got one. Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. So I'm on the road with a guy, and.
Who are you on the road with? Who are you on the road with?
Yeah, so I'm just thinking. I think it was Jay Smith. Jay had been a player for us at Northern State. I'm at Northern, and we're driving, and it's blinding snow, and so he starts by opening his door. And seeing where he can see the line, you know, the line on the highway, two-lane highway.
While you're driving?
Right? So he's, yeah. So we could
give me the general location of where this is.
Wilmer, Highway 12 in Wilmer, Minnesota, or outside of Wilmer. We had to get about 30 miles to get to a town where we could just post up and feel good about posting up. So so then it's starting to drift to a point where he can't see any line. So then I open my door, and he steers from, like, slides over to the middle. He steers, and I'm watching the dotted line in the middle, you know, to make sure that we're on the right side of it. Yeah, we did that for 30 miles, and it took about an hour and a half.
Do you remember where you posted up?
I want to say it was not Wilmer. It was, I don't remember. It's a little town. I know the town's name. I want to say Madison, but I don't think it was Madison, Minnesota. I don't remember.
All right. Give me the player.
A lot of miles ago.
Give me the player that you watched and you just missed on that Nico or somebody said, yeah, we got to take this kid. And you're like, I don't see it. And he ended up going somewhere else.
Probably 1,000 of those guys. I'm stupid. Yeah,
give me one.
Give you one. Yes. Let's see here. Oh, who was, you know, the one is Taquan Waller-Prince.
Torian Prince. Now he goes by Torian Prince.
Yeah, he dropped the Waller part, right? And yeah. Torian Prince. And we had him on campus. Didn't offer him. He was young, like a sophomore. Had him on campus. Went down and saw him again. I didn't offer him. And then we started recruiting him, I think, when I left CSU and came to Nebraska. He was starting to get better and better. This is a year and a half later. And he's signed at LIU Brooklyn because they had been down in Houston. And, you know, he was going to visit there and commit, and we were too late. And then when he came, he opened his recruiting, I think in that spring. I think maybe it was Jim Ferry left. I'm not sure. And he went to Baylor.
Right.
And I think that turned out pretty good for him.
Yeah, the rest is, I say, is history. He does not use the – yeah, he added the Waller. Okay, give me the guy that you saw and that you believed in and everybody else didn't. You're like, I'm telling you, this kid can play. And everybody else said you're nuts.
Well, I think the one that I probably caught crap about was that not everybody said couldn't play. Well, let me think about this. Well, Pierce would have been one of those guys because Pierce really didn't have a lot of skill. You know, like 12 points and 8 rebounds in high school. And, you know, so a lot of people are like, no way can he play. And he could really play.
Yep. And those guys are hard. Those guys are hard. The guys that are just basketball players, but they just don't load up with the scoring stats. Those guys are hard.
There's no scouting report on him. You know, all he does is come up with the ball, like I said. Ben Woodside was a kid that was a terrific guard that a couple of my assistants were, he's a flat jumper. This, that, and the other thing, and he was, you know, great. He was great. All-time leader in scoring, assists, second assist, first in steals.
Yeah, he was a great player. I think he played New Zealand last. I think he's done now, right? Yeah, he's done.
He tore an Achilles. He's married, having kids, running camps and stuff like that. He's doing a heck of a job.
Well, listen, I've taken up too much of your time already. I'd love to do this again mid-season. I'm going to see your boy Craig Smith in about a week or so. They got UT San Antonio.
Doug, I'm on the second hole. I already made one bogey. I'm playing golf.
All right, you go play golf. Thanks for joining me.
All right. See you, bud.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
We get to the NBA, and I know everybody's focused on LeBron and his triple-double streak. It's been impressive, with the exception of the fact that he shot like crap against San Antonio and, like, nobody points it out. Like, let's not do the triple-double thing like we did with Russell Westbrook. Instead, let's point out that as they develop their bench, and that helps with Kuzma coming back, that helps with Caruso now working his way into the rotation, that their comeback against the Bulls, and the Bulls are going to be the Bulls and give up a 16-0 run and take bad shots and not call timeouts because they're trying to learn something. One, it's the Bulls, but two, it was the bench that brought them back in that game. I think LeBron's playing good ball. He's not as bouncy defensively nearly as he used to be. He does play a lot of bully ball, both in transition and in the half court, shooting the ball pretty well, obviously with the exception of that San Antonio game when he started missing his free throws again. He's doing a better job of not leaving his feet to pass as he was early in the season. But 6 games or 7 games in, like, they're pretty good. And I wonder if they need Rondo at all. I think they need Iguodala, and he won't play a ton in the regular season. You know, they can play him some, not play him some. But he's a championship player, and they need those hybrid guys. But I don't think Rondo's that guy. I really like what Caruso's brought to the table. Kemba has been good, but what do we tell you about Gordon Hayward's leg and Gordon Hayward's rehab? It's a lot like Paul George. That first year back is a mess. And now look at how well he's played. The Lakers, I mean, I think they're really good. I do think that they need to manage LeBron's minutes. This idea of proving to everybody how great they are. You're beating bad teams right now. It's good to get the culture of winning, but you don't want to wear yourself out in November when you need you in May. And I think the development of the bench is important. I think they'll add Andre Iguodala, and they'll be right there. I'm not totally convinced that the Clippers are a perfect team. You know, like, can you start and win a championship with Pat Beverly? I love Pat Beverly. He's a junkyard dog, but can you win a championship with Pat Beverly as your starting guard? Don't know if that's actually the case. So they may need some more additions. We'll see. Obviously, they're going to be different when they add Paul George and they get Kawhi Leonard, you know, consistently. Those two together, how does that look? It's a lot of offense, and they're both good defenders. The last thing is this. I think that the Houston Rockets are continuing down a path of destruction, right? It's like a friend who you have a path of destruction. He's on a path of destruction. You keep telling him, like, hey, dude, you're on a path of destruction. No, I'm fine. You're on a path of destruction. No, I'm fine. And sure enough, they're on the path of destruction. That's them. They don't play any defense. They got rid of the coaching staff. There's no sweat equity with these guys. You brought in Russell Westbrook, who's not the defender of Chris Paul. Could he be? Yes, but he hasn't been. Just because he makes mean faces and rocks the baby when he goes, doesn't mean that he competes and plays defense. Harden doesn't play defense. You know, they've lost a lot of their defensive identity in the coaching staff. And D'Antoni, he doesn't even care. So I'm sitting there thinking it's Lakers Clippers. Utah Jokic seems a little bit off, maybe worn down by how much basketball he's played. Denver. I said Utah, Denver. And Utah is just not, outside of Donovan Mitchell, do they have enough? And I don't think the answer is yes. A nuisance team that'll win a game or two in a big playoff series, but not going to beat you in a playoff series. I got more for you on college basketball in the weeks to come. We'll always have a great guest. We'll have more insight. I want to see more teams play. Like, I get that some people do previews, and that's fine. I like to watch something and tell you something you might have missed. Fair? Good. Make sure you listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio app, SiriusXM 217 or 203. Don't be afraid to tell a friend. Download, subscribe, rate. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.